And good evening, and welcome to KRBD's Politics Now with your hosts, Bob and Kyle. I kind of like that title, don't you?
Age before beauty, yeah.
Bob and Kyle. So our hosts this evening are Bob Weinstein, former City of Ketchikan Mayor Democrat, and Kyle Johansson, former Representative Republican. I'm Deb Turnbull. I'm the button pusher and the rule maker. And this is a call-in show, so those numbers for folks to call in are, if you're in Ketchikan or Metlakatla, 225-9655. If you're on Prince of Wales Island or you're streaming us somewhere in the state of Alaska, 1-800-557-5723. And if you're streaming us and you're out of state, it's 1-907-225-9655. Development Director Stuart White is standing by to answer the phone and help us coordinate this evening's program. And we're kind of excited because this evening we're expecting a call any moment now from Governor Walker. The governor. We're going to discuss
Medicaid expansion, primarily.
Oh. I'd say Medicaid in general because there are questions about the current program and expansion. So, and they all fit together. The governor's, I'm sure, used to answering questions about this.
I'm sure he's...
But not in Ketchikan.
Right. I'm sure he's fully prepared to answer all your questions.
People cannot see what's going on in the studio right now. Mayor Weinstein, I feel like I'm at a committee meeting. He has like 14 folders, 3,000 pieces of paper. It's like he has emails.
And the graph.
Email. And he has graphs.
I like the graph.
Wow.
He came prepared.
He came prepared. I brought... my phone.
That's because I like to deal with facts when we're talking about serious subjects like Medicaid and Medicaid expansion, and I want to make sure I have some.
I see.
All right, so do the two of you have positions on Medicaid expansion? Maybe I should ask that, and then I'm going to be quiet.
That's a good question, Bob.
Go ahead.
All of that paper, I think you should go first.
Okay, I certainly support Medicaid expansion. I think the governor did the right thing in taking executive action after he gave the legislature an opportunity to have a full debate and vote it up or down. Legislative leadership, apparently fearing that it would actually pass with on a bipartisan basis, declined to even let there be a vote of the Alaska legislature. So then... my understanding, just from reading the paper and talking with Kyle and others, is the governor has the authority to do what he did. And
well, that I don't know. I never said that. That's one of the questions I have of the governor when he calls in, because there is a question about legality and authority to do that. But I wanted to make that perfectly clear, because that's still up in the air.
Well, I don't know. If you look at the reaction from some of the people in the... leadership in the legislature, they're basically saying the governor had the authority to do what they did. They got a legal opinion, as always.
Well, sure.
It sort of says probably yes instead of 100% yes, because lawyers usually don't.
And that's why we have three branches of government, because the courts figure that stuff out. Right. But nonetheless.
So anyway, I answered yes. I agree with Medicaid expansion in Alaska. And
right.
Kyle?
I think you made some good points, but I'm not sure that the questions that most people have were answered during the legislative session. I'm not sure that it was vetted as well as it should have been. So it's difficult for me to say whether or not it should be expanded or not. But I generally, I think it would be good. But there are questions about the current program, and I think maybe the governor's online.
I think the governor is on the line, so we're going to get him out here and have this conversation.
Bob and I will... continue on after the Honorable Governor Walker finishes.
Governor Walker, are you there?
I am here.
Well, welcome to Politics Now at KRBD, and we're so thrilled that you called in. And I will turn this over to Bob Weinstein and Kyle Johansson.
Very good.
And you.
Good evening, Governor. And as she just said, thanks for joining us tonight to talk about a very important subject for the state of Alaska, Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. And unless, Kyle?
Well, first of all, Governor, thanks for coming on board with us. We appreciate it. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Excellent. Doing really well. First of all, maybe you can just kind of explain the action that you took. The legislature did not expand Medicaid Can you explain what action you took? And then I think we have a couple of questions based on that action.
Sure, I'm happy to. But first, let me just say this. I yesterday, I had the privilege of meeting the entire team of the Ketchikan Junior Division All-Star Baseball Team in my office in Juneau. And they had just won the Alaska District 2 Little League title. And it was great to meet them. And I had to ask them, based on my experience with baseball, if they knew what the mercy rule was, and they did, and that saved the day for me many years ago in a tournament that we were in out of Valdez. So it was great to meet them. I congratulated them. They gave me a Representative Ortiz put that together. I appreciated that, and I ended up with a very nice Ketchikan baseball hat out of it and a nice pin, so it's prominently displayed in my office, it was a good day. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, Governor, I saw that on, I think it was Twitter, your Twitter feed or Facebook. You look pretty good in a Ketchikan Little League baseball cap, I have to say.
Yeah, I was honored to be part of that team pitcher and whatnot. So it was pretty obvious that the guy who was not the most athletic of that group, but yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. What a great group of folks that was.
Well, Ketchikan's proud of the team and the other teams, and thank you for spending some time recognizing their win.
You bet. Now is your Medicaid question. Well, you know, I'm a process person. Coming from local government, I believe that a process needs to be you know, adhered to. So I put the Medicaid expansion in my budget, and that was taken out. And then I introduced a piece of legislation for reform and expansion, and that didn't go to a vote on the floor, either House or Senate. And so I called a special session with Medicaid expansion on the call, and it never got to a vote. And so they had another special session, and it never got to a vote. So I became convinced it was not going to get to a vote, and so that's why I took the action I did, because I was convinced that we were not going to see a vote. We'd had over 30 hearings, I think probably about 35 hearings, which is quite a bit for a particular bill, and so we'd answered every question that was asked of us, and it was time to step up and accept the benefits for Alaska.
Governor, you mentioned, I think, at least four times that you did not get a vote on your bill. Do you believe that the votes were there and it wasn't brought onto the floor as a caucus priority? If it hit the floor, do you think it would have passed?
I think it would have. I mean, I did this somewhere on Aaron's Law when I brought that back and on the special session. When it finally got to a vote, it passed, I think it was 59-1 or something. It was incredible on the passage of Aaron and Bree's Law. Medicaid expansion certainly wouldn't have been by that margin, but I had reason to believe, and people had come to me and said that they felt that it would have passed. And so I think the will of the legislature was met in some respects.
Okay. Governor, could you briefly describe, not process-wise, but why you believe that Medicaid expansion is the right thing? How many Alaskans will it help? Who are they? How many jobs, if any, will be created? Who supports you and so on?
Well, yeah, we estimate there's 40,000 Alaskans that would qualify for it, and these are working Alaskans that sort of fall in the bracket that they make too much to be in covered in Medicaid, but they don't make enough to be able to afford it on their own, and so it's those that are sort of caught in that middle ground. So of the 40,000 that qualify, we expect probably about 20,000 would apply for it, based upon other things that we've seen. You know, it's money that I think the governor of Ohio said it well when he said it's our money. I mean, you bring back to Ohio money that the taxpayers of Ohio paid and should get the benefit from. And I'm saying the same thing about Alaska, that we pay our taxes and they go to Washington. And if there's $150 million available to bring back, we should bring it back on an annual basis. I think we're expecting a benefit of $1 billion in the first 6 years, It estimated it'll create approximately 4,000 new jobs in the medical field, and you know the real benefit. The money actually ultimately goes to the medical providers. You know, the local hospitals that provide uncompensated care through the emergency room, And so it's going to help bring in $150 million into our medical community is going to be a good thing.
Governor, I'm going to jump around here a little bit, but I know you're used to that, being a governor and an attorney. and the two of us are not too hard to follow, as you will know.
I'm with you.
back to your action after failure from the legislature to vote up or down the issue. There's been some question as to the legality of your action, and obviously you must feel pretty comfortable with your position, but it hasn't been tested in the courts. And I'm sure you've heard those things about the language that was in the operating budget saying you couldn't do this. And some people are asking the legislature to litigate, to sue your office regarding this. Do you have thoughts or feelings about about that issue?
Well, I think that it's pretty clear that you can't. You put in the put language, you pass law in the budget language in violation of the confinement law. I think that all the attorneys agree on that, that their own attorneys said you couldn't do that.
Can I interrupt you? Is that why you didn't veto that language? Is there a reason?
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, you can't veto language. You can only veto dollars and cents. I mean, okay. I could have vetoed the entire budget, I guess, but at that point it was so late in the day, process-wise and getting so close to July 1 that that didn't appear to be proof on, because there have been so many opinions basically saying that that was not constitutional. Okay. I was not too concerned by that.
But you feel pretty good, pretty firmly on your legality.
I
do. You think someone's going to litigate? Do you think a legislator or the legislature?
Oh, I don't. You know, I don't know if they will. I think I'm. We're working with some on potential reform provisions that might alleviate that, perhaps. I guess, if it goes to that, I hope it doesn't go to that for a couple of reasons. One is that we really can't ill afford to be involved in suing each other, quite honestly, so I hope it doesn't go there. What, during this one time when the wheels of justice moving slowly would certainly be to a benefit to the working Alaskans that need health coverage. So I hope it doesn't get to that. I hope we can sit down and have a cup of coffee and sort of work through some of these issues on the reform. Our bill had reform in it. We're still working on reform. We started working on reform on December 1st when we were sworn in. So there's a lot of. I just came back from a meeting with Secretary Burwell in Washington D.C. She came to the National Governors Association conference, and I met with her privately and looked at three or four waivers we're requesting, and they. Sum total of those waivers, if they were all provided, would be about another $150 million per year, in which we come out of reduce our general fund by that amount. So, we're continuing to work on reducing our general fund and reducing the budget, and Medicaid expansion does exactly that.
Governor, I think you were actually answering a question that I was about to ask, at least in part, and I just want to clarify whether or not that's the case. It's my understanding that some states, like Arkansas, are working with the federal government to shape Medicaid expansion to fit their particular needs. And is Alaska doing that? Is that what you were just describing in terms of your meetings and waivers? And if not, could you tell us if Alaska is having those kinds of discussions?
Well, we are, and there were a number of grants that were available a few years ago, which Alaska never applied for, and so those opportunities were lost. And we're asking, is there an opportunity to reengage in some of those grants that we never applied for? And the waivers are fairly significant, and there's some things that we pay for out of the general fund that the waiver was approved, then it would be paid for under Medicaid. So, yes, we've asked for all these because other states have as well, and some of them have received them and are receiving the benefits of that. And so, there's no reason we shouldn't do that as well.
Okay. Another question, this sort of gets back to the initial question about who's helped by this, and I don't mean the direct beneficiaries, but if I owned a business, large business or small business, can you tell me why Medicaid expansion will be good for me, even though me and my employees are not directly affected by Medicaid?
Well, a couple of things that are advantageous. It will bring down the cost of health care in the state. There's no question about that. And so, because right now with the uncompensated health care that is provided, we're paying for that. And so as that becomes paid through the expansion, everyone's health care in Alaska should come down. I mean, everything from, our workers' comp rates are set based upon the cost of health care. So there's many ways that we're impacted by the cost of health care, even though someone may say, well, it doesn't help me directly. What certainly does help a small business person if the workers' comp rates come down because the cost of health care comes down. So there's a number of ways that it helps the small businesses.
Well, very good. And just to elaborate on what the governor is talking about, for those who don't understand the uncompensated care issue, in 2013, 17 hospitals in the state of Alaska had a total of $100 million in uncompensated care, which means the bills weren't paid by those receiving the benefits. They were paid by people like me through premiums and higher costs. And in Ketchikan alone, in 2013, there was over $7 million in uncompensated care, which is about 7% of the total revenues of the hospital. So it has a significant impact if that can be reduced, not only statewide, but right here in Ketchikan.
Well, and that's why it's interesting we received resolutions of support, about 165 resolutions of support across the state, most of which, if not all of them, were unsolicited. They were from hospital associations. They were from chambers of commerce. They were from faith-based organizations. They were from United Way. They were from, regional corporations. They were just from municipalities, the Alaska Municipal League. It was the most broad-based support for anything I've ever seen across the state of the kind of support we received. And it was just, I can't think of another issue when I've seen that kind of broad-based support of, this is in addition to all the, thousands of individuals, but the organizations I've never seen anything quite like it.
Right. I think in some it's good for health care and it's good for business, and that's mm-hmm. what the different associations were communicating.
Exactly. Yep.
Good. Governor, so it seems like everybody's pretty confident this is going to go forward. Some of the criticism, and you've talked about talking to legislative leaders, generally thrown out there, it's broken, fix the problems. Now, you've been in office for coming up on a year. Your new commissioner, Commissioner Davidson, is probably getting steady right now. You have consultants, I believe, you've hired. The legislature has the former commissioner on staff or on contract. Do you feel like the issue, people are understanding what might be broken? I mean, there is a significant backlog right now. Are you getting your arms around it? Are you going to have a bill, or are you going to have the legislature take the lead? What's going to happen in January?
Yeah, when we came into office in December, about 8 months ago, there was quite a backlog. And we've been working since, as far as cleaning up that backlog. We're making a lot of progress on it. The ratio now of on-time payments is in the 90-plus percentile. So we have, in essence, fixed the problem going forward. We're still dealing with the backlog, and we're doing all we can to advance that. So I'll take that taken care of. So that's somewhat separate from some of the other reform issues, but that's something we've been working on aggressively. And it just didn't, there's a lot of federal programs that have some challenges, but we've never, denied federal money from that. We receive our 90-10 sharing on highway funding for DOT projects. So there's a number of ways and programs that we see benefit from Washington when it acknowledges there's some challenges in the program. So going forward, we're doing fine on the backlog. We're continuing to work through that, and I think we're making some significant progress on that.
Right. So with the coming of the federal money, we had a Twitter question sent to me yesterday. Do you see that supplanting in the Department of Health and Social Services some state money, or is this going to be additional people you're going to hire to process this, or are we going to see more staff? federally funded, of course, but how is that going to work in your new budget coming up?
You know, there may be additional staff. Actually, the Mental Health Trust has stepped up to participate in that, the cost of that. You know, one of the areas that's going to be beneficial for this is to provide coverage for some of our social service areas of work that we do. And so there could be some additional staffing to administer, but it'll be it's fairly minimal in comparison to the percentage of what we actually bring into Alaska.
Right, because you're going to have possibly 40,000 people sign up here in the next few months. It's going to be a big impact on your existing health and social service staff.
It would be, and we're gearing up to be ready for that. Actually, that would start September 1.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the lead time to gear up for that. Yeah.
Good.
Well, Governor, thank you for discussing Medicaid. I don't know if you want to say anything else about that. We probably have a couple other questions we might want to ask you while we have you.
No, just that it's something that, you know, my philosophy in this role is to make the decision to what I believe is in the best interest of Alaskans. And that was the thought process on this particular decision. Lieutenant Governor Malott and I work closely on lots of pretty much every issue, and I certainly seek his counsel when I make these kinds of decisions. So it's one that we could have done this on January 1 of 2014, and we Alaska didn't, and it was time that we do that.
Well, great. And, you know, I know that when you were running for this office, you campaigned in favor of expanding and explained why it's good for Alaskans. And I guess just to end this segment, I just want to read a quote from the Wall Street Journal briefly. One thing is clear, whether you are for Medicaid expansion or oppose it, Governor Walker has exercised the kind of executive decisiveness for which governors can be known. So I just want to say that you were recognized elsewhere for your executive decision as well.
Oh, good. Well, I appreciate that.
So just moving along, one thing I'm curious about is, do you anticipate that there might be another special session this year? And if so, do you know what the subject or subjects might be?
I do anticipate there could be one. And if we do have it, it'll be on the gas line, and it'll only be after I've had a discussion with leadership about the topic that would be addressed during the special session. There's no reason to call a special session if it's not going to be a productive one. There's a possibility of that. There's also a possibility of dealing with some of the revenue issues as far as revenue enhancement issues, to see if that's what we can do about our, you know, currently it's about a $3 billion deficit. So I'm very anxious to sort of address that, because we can't continue to draw down at $3 billion a year out of our savings, of which we have approximately $7 billion of that left. You know, as we, you know, continue to remind people, is that Alaska does not have a wealth problem. We have over $100 billion of wealth. We have a cash flow problem, so we need to manage our cash flow problem as a cash flow problem, not as a wealth problem.
So, Governor, you might call a special session on finances?
I may. If that's something that the legislature is willing to take up,
right,
I would do that. If they're not, then I'm not going to put us through the effort that would be non-productive. So I'll be meeting with them in the next few weeks and talk about that.
Do you have any particular ideas that you have in mind, or are you going to wait till you talk to the leadership?
Probably wait till we're in the process now. I think we actually had a session at Ketchikan on the where our Commissioner of Revenue and OMB Director come in and do a session on our revenue options. And so we've not narrowed those down yet. We're still looking at all the options.
Okay. Well, I've seen – we haven't had one here in Ketchikan, but I've seen them up in the campuses, I think in Fairbanks and Anchorage. So we should expect one of those, and based on that feedback, you might have some material for a special session then.
Right. I think we'll have that in the next few weeks.
Okay.
As far as the in Ketchikan.
Good.
Oh, very good. Is there anything else that you'd like to discuss while we have you?
I've enjoyed my trips to Ketchikan recently, and we're down for Graham Bradford's 80th birthday party, so that was a lot of fun.
Right.
So we enjoy every trip to Ketchikan and look forward to our next one.
Well, very good. We look forward to seeing you on your next one.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the opportunity to say a few words and join your show, I can't imagine, I don't go very long without visiting Ketchikan, so I'm sure we'll be back sometime in the next month.
Well, we appreciate it, Governor, and thank you for your service to the state. It's much appreciated.
Yep.
You bet. Thank
you,
you so
for
much.
Being with us. Good night.
Yes, thank you. Good Thanks. Night.
Okay. Good night now.
Okay. Well, Bob, we have confirmed, hopefully they're streaming this in the governor's office, and he hears it firsthand that he doesn't hear it secondhand. Because this is tongue-in-cheek. But we've confirmed there's a revenue-raising special session possibly coming this year. This year. That's big news.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
Well, and...
Broken here at KRBD.
Yeah, and it makes sense that if there's going to be consideration, do it now instead of waiting till the regular session next year. I don't know what your thoughts are as the next legislature on that and what the politics are. If legislators are willing to consider something... Do you think the further away it is from the election, the better? Or do you think it doesn't make much difference whether it's September or January, especially when they're dealing with all the other issues that they deal with?
It depends on the issues. It depends on how the legislature is relating to each other right now. It's like a big family, and if everybody's mad at each other, then literally, truly... it's tough to get anything done. So you have to cool things off or maybe wait for the next summer. That's how things work, like it or not.
Right. Well, it's also interesting to me, not knowing what the details are with the gas line, since obviously there's a lot of confidential conversations going on with different players. But I'm assuming that if the governor is planning to call a special session on that, it's because some progress has been made, and he needs the legislature to work with him on approving the next steps.
What's happening. And these special sessions are expected by minorities, majorities, governors, legislators. There's a process to projects this gigantic, and at certain points you have to have the legislature. You have to have the legislature endorse certain steps. So it may be a point where there's a trigger. Where the legislature has to approve or deny a certain part of the process. So I believe from what I've heard that's what's going on. I don't know that there's some big grand deal happening that the legislature is going to christen and we're all going to have a gigantic dividend check in 10 years, but most likely it's a gatepost. It's an issue they just have to do.
Okay, well, we have a caller on line 2. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thank you for calling in, and tell us who you are, and if you care to, and give us your comments.
Okay. This is Terry Robbins calling from here in Ketchikan, and I understand that Governor Walker may not be able to hear my comments, but I wanted to thank him for keeping his promises. He said that he was going to work to push through Medicaid expansion and try to get the legislature to act on it. He gave them 4 chances and then finally took matters into his own hands. I'm very grateful for that. I'm also grateful for the passage of Aaron's laws, which I think was largely due to his perseverance. Medicaid expansion is a wonderful thing for our state. It helps a large number of our population, working Alaskans. That's something that every person in this state should be grateful for. I feel like the chance to bring down the cost of health care and eliminate that $7 million of uncompensated care that we are facing here in Ketchikan is an important thing. I would just like to ask the governor to continue his good work and to perhaps apply some of that perseverance and common sense to the idea of keeping our Alaska Marine Highway system healthy and vibrant. We need it here in Southeast, and some things like Medicaid expansion are worth the cost because of the benefit to the state and the citizens of the state. And so once again, my thanks to Governor Walker and all the people that have worked with him to make this happen for us.
Well, thank you, Terry.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Show.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, yeah. Terry.
You know, I don't know, Bob, about this, and we talked about this right before the show started, is whether what the governor did was legal or not. It has not been. Nobody's challenged it in court. The only people who have standing are the legislators,
right?
Because it's their document. It's their action.
Right. Well, as you know, governors in other states took action to expand. His predecessor, Governor Parnell, took right. executive action by single-handedly blocking it. So apparently, he had the authority to do that.
Because Parnell just said no. He didn't right. do. He didn't proactively do something. Whereas Governor Walker did.
Right. And, Kyle, I'm sure you're aware that the legislative, their own attorneys gave a memo to Mike Hocker
yes.
that basically said, in answer, is what the governor did lawful? And the answer was probably yes. Also, as Governor Walker
possibly. It was pretty vague.
It was probably yes. It was a maybe yes, maybe no.
Yes, it was.
In fact, for a lawyer to do that, it's pretty clear that they think the governor has the authority to do what
no,
he did.
No,
but
no, you cannot say for
yes.
a lawyer to say to be ambiguous means a governor has perfectly clear directions.
You've never heard the phrase. You've never heard the phrase that was a lawyer-like answer.
That made no sense whatsoever. Well, that was a lawyer-like statement.
Let's move on to
that
another
thing.
That
was a lawyer-like statement right there.
Let's move on to another thing.
I object.
She said. The attorney also told the legislature that their language that they inserted to try to block the governor from doing what he did violated the Alaska Constitution. It violated the confinement clause of the Constitution. And as the governor mentioned, he just ignored it because he doesn't veto language or can't veto language. He would have had to veto the whole budget to take an unconstitutional phrase. So here you have these guys and gals, you know, men and women in the legislature. They take an oath to support the Alaska Constitution.
Right.
And they knew or should have known that they were taking action to violate the Constitution.
No.
They knew that before
it's
they
never
passed
been,
the budget.
Bob.
They knew that before
Bob.
They passed the budget.
How do you know whether it's constitutional or not if you never bring it in front of the courts? The legislature does not define the law through their attorneys. That's why we have the different branches of government. Remember American government? You
yes.
have a court system that decides whether or not that language is valid or not. And my only question
is... So let's litigate everything.
My only question is...
Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is I wonder if any legislator or group of legislators or the legislature, the majority as a whole, is going to file suit. Somebody could, an individual legislator
yeah.
could, and that would put it into the courts. Now, does
right.
anybody have the guts to do that?
Yeah, maybe
know.
The Koch brothers and the Americans
they're
for
not
Prosperity.
Elected. They're not elected in Alaska.
Well, but maybe they'll fund something.
Yeah, Why do you have to bring them up? They have nothing to do with them.
Oh, yeah, they do too.
Do they?
Sure.
About whether an Alaska legislator sues
you don't
Governor
think
Walker.
An outside
you think
group
the Koch
you don't
brother
think outside groups you don't think
Mike
outside
Schnault
groups
say,
like the Koch brothers.
Litigate.
You know, they have a chapter. The Koch brothers are funding the Americans for Prosperity, Alaska chapter.
Wow.
As I call it, the Americans for Prosperity, parenthetically for the Koch brothers and other one percenters, because it's all about lowering their taxes so the middle class has to pay more for them. But in any case, they've been very active in opposing what the legislature did. They try to get the governor did. They try to get this put off for a couple more years. But let's,
how about the Pepsi
let's
brothers?
Get into this.
What are the Pepsi brothers doing?
You brought up Medicaid reform. Good subject, Kyle. Good subject. I want to get this out. So when did Obamacare pass? It passed in 2010.
You mean the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Exactly.
The Affordable Care Act, which I call Obamacare, and Obamacare is fine. They knew since 2008 it was going to pass. It was a priority for the new president. He made the mistake of just not getting a bill before Congress when there were Democratic majorities in both houses. But aside from that, and the point I want to get to, and I'd like you to answer, If you don't mind.
If I make it to the end of your your point you're trying to make.
If you'd quit interrupting me. But, okay, so the bill passes in 2010. The legislature, it's now 2015. Why is it that Senator Kelly and legislator in his little cabal now claim 5 years later, we have to reform Medicaid? Why didn't they do that in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014? Why only now, when the governor wants to fulfill a campaign promise and expand Medicaid, is suddenly that's a big issue that needs to be taken care of first? Do you have any opinion on that?
I couldn't tell you. You'd have to ask those guys. I don't know. I know that Senator Kelly wasn't in office. He was actually a special assistant to Sean Parnell at the time. So I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask those people.
And I think maybe this is a great place for us to take a break and a drink of water, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Don't go away. We're going to let them calm down a little bit.
Hey, kids, want to become a Junior Ranger? Come down to the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center every Monday at 2 p.m. to participate in our Junior Ranger programs. You'll get your passport to Discovery. On each Monday, you'll receive a stamp. After completing 8 programs, you'll earn your Junior Ranger badge and patch. Programs begin July 20th and end September 14th. Join us at the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center and explore young.
This is KRBD Ketchikan at 105.3 MHz with translator K296CA Clover Pass, Pond Reef, and Ward Cove at 107.1 MHz. Translator K214BD Point Higgins at 90.7 MHz. Translator K211AT Mountain Point and Herring Cove at 90.1 MHz. Translator K269BA Craig at 101.7 MHz. And translators K211AX Klawak, K211AU Thorn Bay, and K211AV Heidelberg, all at 90.1 MHz.
Man's best friend, face paint, bagpipes, fire stations. What do all of these things have in common? They're part of the Arts Council's Blueberry Arts Festival Pet and Doll Parade, of course. Meet at the corner of Grant and Main on Friday, July 31st. The parade starts at 2 p.m. and ends at the Ketchikan Fire Department. Thanks to our sponsor, Community Connection Early Learning Program. Call the Arts Council at 225-2211 or visit ketchikanarts.org for more info.
Okay, and we are back. I think everyone has taken a nice deep breath. And
Not me.
Not me. There wasn't holding our breath the whole time.
I took a nice deep breath for everyone then. And we have some questions that came in over the phone, and I've handed it one to Bob and one to Kyle. So I'm going to be quiet. You go ahead.
Which one do you want, Bob?
Okay, well, I'll take the one that she handed me. It's how do you both feel about the excellent education enhancement grant proposal by the borough? Is this too much encroachment by the borough on how the school district should spend its funds? Now,
can we stop for just a second?
Yes,
if you can get through this without invoking the Koch brothers or Alec, I'm going to be surprised. Go ahead.
Well, you better call 911.
It's weaved into all your answers,
your
isn't it? The Koch brothers.
Hey, I haven't talked about federal per diem yet, so be careful.
Yeah, you did. So, the whole last show you did.
If it's my understanding, and I'm not... I could be wrong, that what that's talking about is a former and current assembly member proposed a program that would essentially give each student in town a voucher that then could be used at any school. We were talking about the Constitution earlier. I think that's going to run into a problem with the state Constitution, if I'm correct and if I've accurately described it. Because Senator Dunleavy tried to do a school voucher program 2 sessions ago. I don't think it was an issue this year. And it was very clear from the feedback that was given from legislative branch and executive branch and prospectively the judicial branch that the constitutional provision on using public funds for sectarian schools would have been violated. So if these could be used for any school, including religious schools, there may be a constitutional issue. Again, I'm not familiar with the details, so I want to make that clear that if I don't have the correct understanding what I'm saying, maybe equally incorrect. And then the other issue, of course, then becomes, and it's the same issue that the state had, if we're being limited in public funding for public schools, is that the time to start using public funding for private schools? And I know different people have different opinions on that, but that was certainly an issue when the legislature was discussing something very similar in concept in terms of publicly funded vouchers that could be used by anybody for any school. Kyle, do you have any?
No, I think you hit it right on the head. I think it's just a mini voucher system. We've seen nationwide movements. We've seen movements in Alaska. We had voucher bills when I was up in Juneau, constitutional amendments. Now that I agree with the legal opinions, I'll say, well, of course, Bob, it's obvious that it needs to be changed.
Right.
But, yeah, so, you know, I think these people just be happy setting up their trail through the court system. I don't know where this is as a national issue. If vouchers has been decided at the Supreme Court level, do you know? I don't know.
I don't know about the Supreme Court level, but different states have different constitutions.
Sure, yeah. It's like the marriage thing, though.
And you know, the Alaska Constitution, you know, some states have some limited voucher programs that are constitutional in their states. They don't have the same prohibition necessarily on using public
funds. Our Constitution is pretty detailed on this, right?
Right. Well, that's my impression when Senator Dunleavy was proposing vouchers. But the other thing is that, and this is a question, and I don't know the answer, is the intent of those who are advocating this to take money that otherwise would go to the public schools, or is it additive? And if it's additive, how is it paid for without increasing taxes unless the tax rate is currently higher than it needs to be?
If it's Glenn Thompson introducing it, it's not going to have any tax increase associated with it. I mean, Glenn makes his living on work, or his political, not living, he makes his living working. He makes his political career by doing everything possible to keep the taxes down. We know that. So it has to be, I would understand, I would think that if I took my three kids out of Tonga School of Arts and Sciences, their money would go with them, and if they wanted to go to Holy Name, then Holy Name would get a check for three kids' worth.
Right.
That's what I would imagine it would be. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe Glenn's listening. He can call in and tell
us. Well, and I guess I'll just end this with a comment that some people may agree or disagree with. But when Tom Finke was advocating something a number of years ago.
Tom Finke, former mayor of Anchorage.
My response to him was, you already get vouchers, Tom. You and your whole family. They're called permanent fund dividends. And if you want to use them for your private school or religious school education, have at it. It's your option. The state's already giving you money. It's your choice as to what you spend it on. So anyway, I'll just leave it with that. But I think the proposal probably has a long way to go, and I suspect they'll get some advice from borough attorney Scott Brian Erickson on whether or not it, on the face of it, is constitutional or not. And like other subjects we've discussed, it may or may not be litigated.
It'll be nice, because I think this is going to be an issue that I'm going to want to bring up in the next couple of months, especially with school coming. We've got that lawsuit. We're still suing the state. It's going to the Supreme Court, maybe. I think that's a good thing to talk about. And also how this all plays out.
And so I want to remind our listeners about our phone numbers. Please. Kyle, you wrote those down. You want to tell them what they are?
I didn't.
Oh, there you were. I thought you were scratching them down.
Nope.
225-9655 if you're in Ketchikan or Metlakatla. 1-800-557-5723 on Prince of Wales Island or anywhere in the state of Alaska. And if you're streaming from out of state, 1-907-225-9655. Give us a call. Have a question.
We did have a question written down here, and this, Bob, will make you happy because this will bring back memories of Senator Robin Taylor. Fast ferries.
Okay.
Remember when Robin was in charge of the Marine Highway?
I think I've done my best to have that go into one of the
darker
recesses of my brain. But
I know he's not listening right now. He's down in Washington somewhere. Anyway, we had somebody call in and talking about looking at the long term for the Marine Highway and the validity and need for the fast ferries. And do we know what the governor's plans are? Well, the governor's not on anymore, so we can't really tell you what the governor's plans are. We'll find out when we look at his budget. I think the Marine Highway took a little bit of a hit this year in the budget. Is that
well,
right?
Well, they took a hit, and that was a point of contention in the negotiations at the end. And I believe the independent and Democratic minority were able to get some of the funds back, but certainly not all of them. And as we know, DOT decided that the Marine Highway system would take a fairly significant hit in terms of the schedule. They have the schedule out now for public comment. Everybody I know in Southeast is very concerned about it, both for individual reasons, for business reasons, transporting fish and other things, for team sports and kids traveling. You know, there's a lot of different impacts. And to me, it seems like there was an adequate recognition that the Marine Highway system is such a critical part of the transportation system, not only in Southeast, but as you know, it goes across the Gulf and goes.
Well, you know what is interesting about the Marine Highway is there are more ports now outside of Southeast than there are inside of Southeast.
Right.
There are more Marine Highway ports in other parts of the state, yet it's all of Southeast who has to carry the water in
right.
Juneau, which is really very frustrating. I know Senator Stedman understands that concept, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand, and it's very interesting to me that some of the mega projects, for example, there's tens of millions, I think, still stashed away for the Juneau Access Road that's becoming increasingly less likely to ever get built because it's, at the end of the day, $1 billion or more project. And the question is, why isn't some of that money being reappropriated to help keep the ferries serving the people of Southeast and Southwest and other places in Alaska?
Now, that gets back to the fast ferries. Now, there's, I think in the news today, they were talking about, I think I heard it on KRBD. Of course I did. That's where I get all my news. About the fast ferries having damage to their hulls. It seems like every time you turn around the fast ferries, they're getting their engines replaced. They're getting put up in dry dock. They were purchased by Governor Knowles, actually.
I believe the first one was, and I think his successor had the second one built instead of stopping it.
I think Tony wanted to build 4, if I remember correctly. Good thing we stopped him. Nonetheless, fast ferries, I think they're pretty cool. They work really well in Prince William Sound, apparently. But I don't know. I don't know. I always have problems down here in Southeast.
Yeah, in any case, I'm concerned about the future of the Alaska Marine Highway System.
Well, the fast ferries are part of the Alaska Marine Highway System. They can't get rid of them. They got to do something with them. And this gentleman wants to know, what do you think about them? I want to know, too, Bob.
I've never been on one.
You've never been on a fast ferry?
No, I've been on the other ferries, all of them, but not that one.
Unbelievable.
I've never been on one.
You've never been on a fast ferry?
No.
Yeah, well, they don't go from Ketchikan anywhere.
Oh, boy.
Right?
You know.
So, Kyle, one of the things, two things. Number one, just for the record, I didn't bring up the Koch brothers or Alec in my discussion about
school vouchers. I know it was difficult
vouchers,
for you.
So I just want you to know that for the record.
The other thing is, at the last show,
we didn't have time to get to everything. And one of the things that I think you had wanted to bring up was looking forward to next year's primary, and in terms of what's happening on the Republican side with Senator Murkowski up for re-election.
Oh, right. Yeah, the federal races. We did get kind of sidetracked. We were going to talk about that.
So I'll turn it over to you.
Well, yeah, you know, I just thought it was interesting. And I just read an article a couple of days ago that says, you know, Murkowski ready this time around. You know, I mean, she got beat by Joe Miller last time. She's going to have a lot of money. But once again, it's going to be a primary race, and you know, Dunleavy, he's been talking about running. Joe Miller himself has got to be running. He got what, 30%
in 2014 without spending a dime, essentially.
He barely spent a penny. He didn't campaign until the last 10 days of the race this last time around. He got 30% of the primary, the one that Dan Sullivan eventually won against Dan Sullivan. Anyway, so it's interesting to watch. I mean, when you're in that primary, anything can happen. I mean, I don't know. Joe Miller can get a lot of money. And, you know, I listened to him last year. He sounds a lot better than he did before. And for people who don't follow it, and it's the first time they see Joe Miller, you know, it takes a couple times for people to. What, Abe Lincoln ran five times before he won, right?
Right, and Mike Dunleavy is a state senator from the Mattsu Valley.
The most populous area in the state.
He certainly has a following. He's been, you know, he tried to gut Aaron's Law. He's very pro-school vouchers. He was at a Planned Parenthood rally yesterday in Anchorage, and, you know, some thought is he may be positioning himself for a primary run.
Yeah, well, that's very true. I mean, if you come from the most conservative part of the state that's growing the fastest and you want to run for that primary. I'm just saying, you know, I think she's got a challenge. And now I've heard from people who have talked to the senator, friends of hers, that she's concerned, and she should be. She's paying attention. She's obviously the favorite. There's no doubt about that. But it's not going to be a piece of cake. I think it's going to be a difficult primary for her.
Right. Well, and you can probably answer this question more than me. Who votes in a closed Republican primary? I mean, obviously, it's Republicans and independents. But who, if you could characterize the
it depends on who else is on the ballot. It depends on whether or not there are initiatives on the ballot. If there's an abortion initiative, see, this is what you got to look for coming up this session. Is you've got to look for initiatives, or not initiatives, but ballot issues, constitutional amendments, or advisory questions, or initiatives for that matter, because a lot of those are organized by political parties and political people. And you know this, Bob, if you get a conservative initiative on the ballot for the primary, if there's an abortion question that's going to be on the ballot, that's going to draw out all the conservatives. And if you're Mike Dunleavy, you want to get something conservative. If you're Joe Miller, you want to get something conservative on the ballot to draw all those conservative people out. They're not going to come out for you, but when they see your name there and they know you're the conservative, they're going to vote for you. Those are things to watch for, and they're going to be coming up too, no doubt about it. Anyway, I just think it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting dynamic. And your former boss, we still don't know if he might jump in the race for Senate.
Well, as you said, you read an article about Senator Murkowski. I read an article about Senator Begich the other day, and the impression I got was he's happy doing what he's doing right now.
See, that's what he wants you to think. It's that old fake left go right thing. He's got you on your laurels, Bob.
Really? Well, we'll see about that.
Well, we did have a caller saying,
you never know. You never know who's going to run and who's going to run on the Democratic side. I mean, heck, maybe I'll run.
You might. You could run.
You know?
I'm running for Senate in New York State.
Well, good luck.
It's true.
Have they asked you?
You know the guy that ran from New Jersey in Alaska?
I think it was it Maryland or was it New York?
No, he was from New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay.
The U.S. Constitution does not require you to be a resident of the state that you run for.
You just have to be a resident if you're elected. Right.
When you get elected, you have to be a resident.
Right.
Or when you're sworn in, I think it is.
Right, but you know, I don't know what the requirements are in New York, but I bet it's more difficult yes. or more expensive
yes.
to get on their ballot, no matter where you live, than it was in Alaska. Yeah,
you can't hold office, so you can't be sworn in until right. you're a resident. So you could run as a resident of right. New Jersey, win, move to Ketchikan the day before you're right. sworn in.
I think
in.
That guy's run for Senate in 5 states,
he has, yeah.
and he's lost.
Indiana,
Alaska.
Nobody knows who he is.
Well, it's amazing. But, I mean, he's a lawyer from New Jersey, and he found a loophole in the U.S. Constitution, and he's just kind of playing with it. You know, some people like to do that.
Well, so we did have someone call.
We did. We had a person call from, looks like from up in Prince William Sound that says, no, we don't, doesn't work so great, Prince William Sound. Well, maybe from the cruise perspective, but apparently they pack the boats full. A lot of people like riding them. From the crew's perspective, might not be the best thing in the world. And he also said that Murkowski pushed the fast ferries.
I think he may have fulfilled the con. I think Noel signed for two
yeah.
with an option for the second one. My memory could be wrong, but I think Frank Murkowski
right.
exercised the option.
Yeah, because Knowles did sign the contract. For two, Murkowski came on. It was originally four, it got pushed back to two. Governor Murkowski brought another one on, and then hired Robin Taylor, and Robin parked them all in Wrangell.
All right.
It's true. Bow to bow.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, so let's. What else would you like to talk about in a very short span of time?
I'd like to talk about what we're going to talk about next. I want to talk about the intertie, Bob. You got a lot of interest in that,
yeah.
an experience in that.
A little bit.
Yeah, you were on the Four Dam Pool or the Poor Dam Fool or whatever we used to call
it. Four Dam Pool Board and yeah. then the SEPA Board.
SEPA Board. Yeah. So you got all the inside scoop.
I don't know if I have the inside
You have all the secrets,
scoop.
Don't you?
What's that?
Why aren't my rates dropped?
Well, why haven't they gone up?
Haven't they gone down?
Yeah.
That was the big promise in the day when we built the intertie. Either the rates were going to drop or we were going to repay the debt faster.
Right.
And neither one of those has happened.
And my suggestion, since he's on the SEPA board, I would call the mayor and ask him that question.
No, I've asked the elected officials enough times. You know what they tell me? This is really frustrating because I know people out there. I've talked to them. I know people out there listening have got the same response. You get a city council member who's on the SEPA board, and they tell you, oh, well, they're different things. I'm a city council member when I have this hat on, but when I have a SEPA hat on, I don't have to do what the interest of Ketchikan is. It's
yeah,
a different
entity. I know what you're saying.
That's really frustrating because we put you on that board
yep.
to represent our interests okay. against Wrangell and Petersburg.
Right,
and
but we're going to have this discussion.
No, we'll do it now, show. Right? We'll,
well
go
you
another
really,
hour?
No, we don't have another hour.
So
I want to talk about that next time.
Okay. And Bob, what about you?
Oh, I don't know. Depending on what happens, I wouldn't mind talking about the Iran treaty, which has become heavily politicized. And, you know, with all the hearings before people knew the facts, whether you agree with it or not, people were coming out against it before they read it. Some of the same people who were criticizing some people for maybe not reading 2,000 pages of the Affordable Care Act didn't bother to read the treaty or the agreement themselves. And so it will be a very political thing. It's probably going to get tubed in Congress. The question is, will there be enough votes to override the president's veto? But so it may be old history before we meet again, or it may be current. But it's a big question and a lot of different opinions on if it's good or if it's bad and why, and if there could be anything better. I mean, I had, sort of like the Affordable Care Plan, there was discussions by some who opposed it to repeal and replace. Well, now it's just repeal because the replacement plan either looked like Obamacare or it was a blank sheet of paper. So the question now is on the treaty or the agreement, it's not a treaty, if you don't like it, and I'm not saying average citizen, but if majority of Congress doesn't like it, what's their detailed alternative that they think the United States partners as well as Iran would agree to at the end? Or are we just back to square one with sanctions and development of nuclear weapons in Iran? Who knows? Maybe that's where we'll end up.
All right.
Well, I just think the Iranians can pretty much do what they want to do.
We're running out of time, guys. I want to thank you both for being here this evening. We want to thank Governor Walker. We want to thank everyone who called in, listened.
Yes.
And remember, the views and opinions expressed on this program tonight are not the views and opinions of the KRVD staff, board of directors, and most of the membership.
Yep. Certainly. Thank you very much.